Well, good morning, LifePoint Lewis Center. Thanks so much for joining us today in our series called Guardrails. We are looking at the reality that we don't have to choose between the relationship and the rules. And what we mean by that as we're looking at the Ten Commandments is that we're hopeful that the relationship with God is what makes the commandments make sense. As a matter of fact, a different way that we've said that is that rules without the relationship are always going to lead to religion or to rebellion. So we talked about a little bit last week about how Jesus was full of grace and truth. And there are spaces that we can get into at times in our lives where we're more all about truth, right? And if we're only about truth, I think sometimes we find ourselves in a judgmental position, declaring the rights and wrongs of others, kind of taking God's place in that. If we're only about grace, I think we also find ourselves kind of denying the fact that God has given us principles for how the world works. So we want to be both. Today, what we're going to do is we're going to look inside these guardrails of grace and truth, this life of freedom, this road that God has given us to walk. We're going to look at the seventh commandment. So if you have a copy of the scriptures and you want to turn there, you can turn to Exodus chapter 20, and we will start by reading verse 14. It says this, "You shall not commit adultery." Now, one of the things that we haven't mentioned about the commandments thus far in the series is that every thou shalt not is really a thou shalt. For every negative, there's also a positive. So when God, through Moses, says to the Hebrew people, thou shalt not commit adultery, that's the negative way of saying thou shalt have great marriages. And the original hearers, because the Hebrews would have just come out of 400 years of slavery down in Egypt, that really would have probably been the framework for their culture. And so in Egyptian culture, in their world, most marriages were arranged. They were arranged for communal stability, but because they were arranged and they kind of lacked human chemistry, infidelity would have been widespread in that community. So God is calling the people of Israel to a radically different standard in terms of monogamy. So that's why I think this commandment would have rattled them a little bit. So as we talk today, I think we understand that there's a lot of different people who are going to hear this from different perspectives. I feel a little bit bad because, I kind of look at myself personally and I think, whenever I married my wife, Angie, I married up, and I mean like Empire State Building, Rainier up when I think about her. I way out kicked my coverage, sometimes, I'll tell a story or something at church about our family on Sunday, and all you see of Angie, if you're sitting behind her, is that she's just kind of shaking her head like that. As somebody told me one time, they're like, I kind of think Angie's a bobblehead doll. She just shakes her head at me a lot. And so I'm grateful for our relationship. And I know we all come from different spaces in that some of you have great marriages, and good for you, man. I'm grateful that you've been blessed. Some of you have mediocre marriages, and I'm hopeful that today will be cause for you to say, you know what, I'm going to dig in. I'm going to go back. I'm going to have that conversation. I'm going to go back. I'm going to work. I hope that'll be a reality for you. I know some of you have rocky, painful marriages, and so maybe this topic today is going to be difficult. Some of you listening today are single adults, and you're looking at the married people right around you and going, oh, I'm not so sure, right? I want to jump in there. I want to try that. And some of you are single adults who were previously married and have walked through divorce, and that's an incredibly painful and difficult reality. I just want to say that I feel like I realize that this message is going to hit a lot of us, in very, very different places, in very different spaces, in very different ways. The other thing I think that's important for us to note is that marriage is an opportunity relationally to grow in our relationship with God. If we get to the place where we begin to look at our lives like the fact that relational difficulties are just things to be avoided, we will deny the reality that God uses relationships in our lives, and especially marriage and love relationships in our lives, to sanctify us, to call us to something different or something better. So just because something is wrong, or just because something is difficult, or just because something needs work, doesn't mean it's something to be avoided. The struggle relationally, the struggle yields strength. Our marriages can be great. They can still grow because we, as imperfect fallen human beings, we're never going to get it 100% right, and we've always got room. So all of that said, Jesus picks up this commandment from Exodus chapter 20 and repeats it in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, and he says this: "You have heard it said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart." For me and Ange, we didn't get any premarital counseling per se whenever we got married. We didn't really sit down with anyone and talk through issues. And so we were married for about 18 months, and we looked at each other and we think, well, this is good, but man, there's some areas where we need work and it could be better. And so we sat down and we talked to somebody and we got some help. I'll mention that more a little later on in the message. But I think what Jesus does is he picks up this Old Testament reality where I think some people in their culture would have said, well, I haven't done that, so I'm good. And he says, well, wait a minute, think about it this way. And he equates adultery with lust. Now, I want to repeat what I said last week, that Jesus is not saying that the consequences of these two things are the same. Certainly, they're not. The consequences of dealing with lust, or what the scripture calls lustful intent, and the consequences of adultery are very, very different. However, they come from the same place and space. And so what I want us to do this morning is we're going to look at what I believe to be the most comprehensive biblical teaching on adultery, sexuality, satisfaction, and fulfillment, and maybe, quite possibly, one of the most ignored when it comes to this topic, just because some of the difficulties of this reality. So again, you have a copy of the scriptures, turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 6, and we're going to look at the end of chapter 6 and the beginning of chapter 7. So 1 Corinthians 6:16 says, "Or do you not know that he who is joined to a prostitute becomes one body with her? For as it is written, the two will become one flesh. But he who is joined to the Lord becomes one spirit with him. Flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but the sexually immoral person sins against his own body." So Paul writes here in these verses and the ones that are coming in the beginning of chapter 7, some of the most profound ideas about human sexuality and behavior that the world really has ever heard. I would remind us that he is talking to the Corinthian church and utilizing Greek language. So the Greek word for adultery is the word porneia. It's where we get our word for pornography. It applies to more than we think of just the human context in terms of the way that we apply the word. The word porneia referred to all sexuality outside of the bonds of marriage, not just marital unfaithfulness. So I say all that to say, as Paul talks about this reality, he is talking to both single people and married people as he makes these references. And he does it in the context of Corinth. I'll show you a picture of the Acro-Corinth in the modern ruins of the city. That was up there was a temple to Aphrodite on that hill on the Acro-Corinth. She was the one of the Greek goddesses of fertility. And so there were over 1,000 temple prostitutes there, both men and women. And every night in this kind of mega city of Corinth, those temple prostitutes would leave the hill up there in that temple, and they would flood the streets of the city. And it was a mega city. It was a port city. There were people coming from all over those parts of the world. There are commerce and trade. So you think about it like it's a Las Vegas. It's a Bourbon Street in New Orleans. It's very much that climate. So in Corinth, there were two very different views of human sexuality. The first one is what I'll call a Platonic view. So the philosopher Plato, he kind of laid out this idea that everything with the mind was good, everything with the body was bad. It was unnecessary or evil. So when it came to sexuality, Plato's idea was only lower human beings needed sexuality, that was a lower need, that if you were an elite, if you were wise, if you were a great philosopher in the world, you relied on mentality. And so anything that had to do with philosophy was good. Anything that had to do with the body was bad. So Plato's view was, it's not necessary. You don't need it. And quite frankly, shouldn't be part of it. Today, we still talk about Platonic relationships. We mean relationships where there's no physical intimacy, human contact that are involved in those kinds of relationships. So the Platonic view, I would say, was too conservative. But at the same time, the mystery religions, or the view of the mystery religions in Corinthian culture, it was too liberal. So the mystery religions treated sexuality like an appetite. So just like whenever you get hungry, you eat. Whenever you feel sexy, you would step into physical intimacy in some way, form, shape, or fashion in their culture. So there are these two really opposing views in their culture when it comes to human sexuality and relationships, and it really left the church asking the question, so Paul, what do we do here? And so what Paul says in these initial verses in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, number one, flee sexual immorality. Now, the idea in Paul's mind is that you are running from something to something. It's not just that you're trying to run away constantly from sexual immorality, but rather that you're running from sexual immorality, running to an active, growing relationship with Christ. And he makes the statement here. He says, but don't you know, don't you understand, don't you see that whenever you join your body to a prostitute, again, I'm assuming referencing those temple prostitutes of Aphrodite, don't you see that you become one body or one flesh with them? Now, people we know just from history in Corinth died from sexually transmitted diseases really at an alarming rate compared to the rest of the world. And so Paul says, listen, you've got to see this reality that you're risking your life. You're taking your life into your own hands. And obviously, right, don't do that. It's not worth that. That's not what it was created and designed for. And so Paul, giving them this admonition, the people heard that, and I think they went from this mystery religion's view, and they responded kind of in the Platonic view, because if you get to the end, that's the end of chapter 6, then you roll right into chapter 7. And remember, when the scriptures were originally written, they didn't have chapter breaks. So this was one long, long letter, and so here's how the Corinthian church would have responded to this admonition from Paul in chapter 7, verse 1. Paul says, now concerning the matters which you wrote, it is good for a man to not have sexual relations with a woman. So this gets a little bit complicated here, so kind of just dial in real close and listen. Paul references a letter that the Corinthian church had written to him asking obvious questions about his stance on human sexuality and relationships, which means that most likely Paul had written them a prior letter. Now, let me just give you a commercial here, okay? Just step out of the topic for a second. Here's a free commercial. This is why having a good study Bible is always a great idea. I would highly recommend the Life Application Bible for you, because figuring out some of these complicated issues, man, a good study Bible will help you do that. Because what we're seeing in the text is that likely what we call 1 Corinthians is probably not the first letter that Paul had written to their church. There was probably a letter that he had written to them, and out of response to that, Paul says, hey, here's what you wrote back to me, that it is good for a man to not have sexual relationships with a woman. So what it seems like has happened is that what Paul said is, hey, look, don't join your body to a prostitute, right? And what they heard when Paul said that, they heard Paul say the Platonic view is right, right? So obviously what Plato said is right. What's in the mind is good. What's in the body is bad. And they just began to lean more towards adopting that view, just because I'm sure of the human alarm about people dying left and right from these, again, sexually transmitted diseases that were going on. And all of a sudden, so Paul says, hey, you wrote this to me. I need to correct this. So the next verse, chapter 7, verse 2, says this. Paul says, the husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. So Paul says back to them, no, you know, you got it all wrong. It's not that human sexuality is all bad. In the context of covenant created monogamy between a husband and a wife, it's kind of like Paul says, it's just the opposite of that. Like sexuality between a husband and a wife in a monogamous covenant-centered relationship underneath God's authority actually becomes, the joyful ideal that God intended all the way back in the Garden of Eden that exists even into when Paul writes that I believe exists even into today. So the first thing I think that we learn is this reality that that human sexuality, that sex cannot be denied or deified. It can't be either one of those two realities. So on the one hand, I think there's this tendency for us to make a God out of sex. And that's wrong. That's you know, one guardrail one way. But the other idea is that we just don't even talk about it and pretend like it doesn't exist. And that's guardrail out of bounds the other way. It's almost like there's two are polarized so far from each other where the culture is taken over because at least the culture will talk about it and discuss it. And the church has been so quiet about it historically and pretended almost like this doesn't even really exist. It's not something to be discussed. That we've ended up at these two poles, one view too liberal, one view too conservative. Think about it like this. Let's say you stepped onto a college campus and you know, you looked around and you thought, man, well, how do people treat food? So let's say you walk into the dorm room of four college guys and they've got posters up on their walls of vegetables, right? And they're all sprayed down with water just right. Maybe they're on the beach sitting out of a surf and the vegetables have these kind of seductive eyes looking, and all the boys are just sitting there staring at the poster and like, man, this is awesome. You'd be like, what? Something's out of whack here, right? I mean, let's say you stepped up on that college campus. Let's say you went to a club and you know, you've got the music in the background. Right, and you look out on the dance floor, and there's a gal out there dancing with a hamburger. Right, you'd be like, "Man, these people are out of whack in terms of their appetite in relation, right, to food." But let's say you walked on that same college campus, and the next day you were hungry, and you asked somebody, "Hey, where's the cafeteria? Where do we eat?" And the response you got from the people on campus was, "We don't know. We don't know where anybody eats. We don't." And there were no signs to a cafeteria. There were no directional arrows pointing you to the cafeteria. There was no help about. And you obviously know people are eating, right? Human beings get hungry, and they eat, most of them, three times a day. So you know there's a reality there, but people are just pretending like it doesn't happen. I think a lot of times in our world, we have allowed, in Christendom, I'll say, we have allowed the culture to kind of take over this reality of teaching people and talking about sexuality to the degree that, you know, a lot of them make it out to be a god in their lives. And in response, the church, I mean, the culture walks around like almost like a prideful lion, right? It's like it's got all the answers when it comes to sex and sexuality and the freedom that they say that comes with. But then over here, you've got the church that's kind of like an ostrich with its head stuck in the sand that kind of pretends like it doesn't even exist and we don't even talk about it. And neither one of those two views, I don't think it's right. What Paul says here is, no, you don't understand that sexuality inside the context of covenant marriage really becomes the joyful ideal. It's a gift that God has given to us to be experienced underneath his authority and underneath his leadership. Well, that begs the question then, okay, so if we as a church today, if we don't want to... you know, if we don't want to take the culture's view, and at the same time, we don't, you know, think about like a high school dance, right? Popular kid out in the middle, got all the dance moves, right? Got it all figured out. And over here, you've got kind of me in high school, kind of a nerdy kid over in the corner, right? Who doesn't know anything about dancing, would like to, but I'm not going to do that because I don't, you know, I'm too scared of all that. You know, I think what happens is our kids and our young people default to, well, at least the culture talks about it in a way that seems intriguing and attractive, And I think we're doing ourselves a bit of a disservice. So that begs the question, how? What should that look like in the context of Christian relationships? And in the next verse, in verse 3, here's what Paul says. For the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Now, Paul gives us a picture here of two people who are living together in monogamous, covenant-committed marriage. And in doing so, he shows us how husbands and wives, how they serve one another and live to with one another in the context of marriage and love and affection. Now, I want to be real careful about these verses because I think, and I'm going to generalize here for a sec, but I think that historically, men have used these verses to kind of force sometimes their wives into this mentality for on-demand affection. And that's not the reason that these verses are given. Rather, what Paul says is that when two people come together, covenant committed to one another in beautiful ways that they don't see their bodies as their own, and they lean in to one another to serve each other, it's a beautiful thing inside the context of marriage, which is why I think the scriptures are so wise when it comes to realities about love and marriage, things like cohabitation, for example. So what happens when two people live together who aren't married is that most times difficulties develop over time. So covenant marriage, right, in the context of the scriptures, covenant marriage says this, that two people come together and they get to know one another, and so they become committed to each other emotionally, right? There's spiritual connection. They're committed to each other in a spiritual sense out of that initial emotional connection. Then they become committed to one another financially, then legally in a marriage ceremony, and then finally they're committed to each other physically. That sex is the end of a covenant commitment. Well, what happens when we as human beings decide to do that, and we're going to live together first, and we're going to practice the physical commitment of marriage first. So we take that and we put it on the front end of that commitment. It's not that there's not still emotional attraction. That still exists. But what happens after that is that we're not really committed to each other spiritually because we've got this physical commitment out here outside the boundaries of marriage. We're not committed to each other financially because we're not committed to each other legally. And so after the euphoria tends to wear off in terms of couples who are living together, that's when sometimes things really tend to tail off according to statistics, because that creates this sense of insecurity. In other words, we're experiencing what we believe to be the joys of marriage up here on the front. But when things get difficult here on the back, the spiritual commitment, the financial commitment, the legal commitment about whether or not we're going to take that step, there's this underlying insecurity that one of you could leave at any moment. So the idea of covenant marriage is that you make these covenants together along the way that then becomes legal, so that what two people do, I mentioned to you earlier that Angie and I got some marriage advice 18 months into our marriage. It's been some of the most helpful advice for me in thinking about marriage, is that marriage is like a triangle. And in the triangle, you've got God up at the top of the triangle. I'm down here and Angie's down here at the two bottom points of the triangle. And as Angie and I grow closer in our relationship to Christ, what automatically happens is that we grow closer together. That as our covenant with Christ is elevated in our lives, it elevates our relationship, because the closer we get to God, the more we humble ourselves. And the more we humble ourselves, the easier it is for two human beings to humble themselves toward one another, to see my body is not my body, her body is not her body, but they've been given to us as gifts, then to give and give to one another. It's so much easier to see that and live out that covenant commitment as we see it that way, because we understand the closer we get to God, more about our own human imperfections. So I would encourage you to live in this reality, maybe even say these words out loud. I will never be married to a perfect spouse. Never. And so we don't expect perfection. We don't expect them to be exactly right in any area, but what we can do and what we can be and what we can become is growing. And as we grow closer to Christ, we can grow closer then to each other. So here's the reality then that Paul lands on in verse 4 of chapter 7, verses 4 and 5. He says, do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time that you may devote yourselves to prayer. But then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of a lack of self-control. Paul brings us all the way back to this whole idea of Jesus equating sexual immorality or adultery with lust. Lust is the human desire for something that will never satisfy us. It's like looking for water in empty wells. And that's why Jesus equates these two things for us. That's why Paul says, flee sexual immorality. Not because sex inside of the boundaries of marriage is bad. Rather, this is a great thing. It's a joyful ideal that God has given us. But if you think that that is ultimately going to provide you satisfaction, you're going to find that that's a very, very empty well. Flee sexual immorality. Run from it because you are running to Christ, to your relationship with God. Dig a deep, deep well in your relationship with God. That's why pornography, quite frankly, is so deadly, because it leads us only to isolation. Because you're looking for water in a well that's dry. It will never ultimately satisfy your souls. And I'm so grateful. We have people here at LifePoint, man, who are doing a great job fighting that. We have some guys here who are part of a national ministry called the Samson Society. It's a ministry that allows men to be transparent and vulnerable with other men who find themselves in the same stage and place and who want to fight that same battle and do it together. If you're interested in taking a step, and I'd be more than happy to help you get connected. Any way that we can help in your relationships, whether that's a referral to a local counselor, whether that's being helpful by connecting you to a life group, in any way, in any time, space, in any way that we can, man, we want to be helpful to have the kind of joyful marriages that God intended for us. That God intended for us to have. I think the real key to this passage in 1 Corinthians 6 and 7 is really right there in towards the end of chapter 6, where Paul says this, probably the most familiar verses in the passage, 1 Corinthians 6, 19 and 20. Or do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? You are not your own, for you were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body. Paul says that your body has been bought. That God left heaven, came to earth in the person of Jesus Christ, and he bought you. So really the question that you and I have to answer is, who do we belong to? Do we belong to ourselves so we can do whatever we want with our physical bodies? Or do we belong to our Creator, so that we use our bodies in the ways that he says is best, and what he says that our bodies are designed for? He created sexuality, I said earlier. He gave it to us as a gift, and used rightly inside the context of guardrails, human sexuality is an echo of what we're going to experience in eternal love, living in the fullness of God as our King in eternity. It's just that. So we don't have to live it out in a way that ultimately leads to isolation, like our culture suggests. And yet we don't have to pretend like it doesn't exist because we're somehow afraid of it. No, God has created it. He's given it to us as a gift, for two human beings come together in monogamous marriage, one man, one woman, covenant bond forever. Complete vulnerability, complete acceptance. One of the most attractive things in the world. So I'll say it to you this way. The most fulfilled people, the most fulfilled single people in the city of Columbus, the most fulfilled single people in Delaware County should be people who flee sexual immorality because they're running to their relationship with Christ, and that is the well of satisfaction that they live from. The most fulfilled married people in Delaware County should be monogamous Christian couples, happily, joyfully living together in approach to Christ, and then living out this beautiful relationship that God has given us in terms of our relationship with one another. And that only happens as we humble ourselves in the presence of God. And the only reason that we do that is because he humbled himself to us. In Jesus leaving heaven, giving up kingly glory, coming down, becoming one of us to die for us so that we would come to love him. If you've never taken that initial step, while there are a lot of helpful things in the world, helpful things like reading great books, going to see counselors. But if you've never gotten that step right, where you've humbled yourself to the person of Christ because of your imperfection, because of your lack of ability to fix yourself, it all starts there. And we would invite you to that relationship today. Let's pray together. God, difficult topic today. I know that, Lord, people are all over the map in relationship to past experience, Lord, to maybe health crises, God, to their relationship about the things, God, that maybe they've experienced. And so, God, I pray for grace. I pray for grace to us to hear this well. And Lord, not to just step back and disengage from these verses. Lord, they're just as real and relevant as ever for us. God, give us the grace to do the hard work, to dig in, to be sanctified by your word and by our lives. Lord, I pray for anybody today who doesn't have a personal relationship with you, that if today is their day, that God, they would take the step of following you. I pray for marriages. I pray for people who are single. God, all of us in our fidelity, not just toward one another, but primarily, God, our fidelity towards you. And Lord, for you to allow everything else in our lives to grow out of that. It's in your name we pray. Amen. Well, I'll just say today that if you've joined us and listened to the whole message today, that I know it was a difficult text, and I know that it can bring up difficult questions. So we would love to help you with next steps. If you're watching on one of our social media platforms, there's a link there that says next steps. If you're watching on Apple TV or Roku, go to lifepointohio.com/watch. And from there, you'll find that same Next Steps button. If you'd like to take the step of following Christ today, you can let us know that. If you would like to share a prayer request with us, it'd be our privilege to pray with you. You can do that from there as well. If you'd like to take the step of going public with your baptism, you can begin that conversation with us right there as well. You know, we thought about offering a resource today in light of the message. We've written a book, our church together a few years ago, called Your Next 30 Days of Relationships. And it's really 30 different relational stories that come out of the framework and fabric, the life of our church, that we would be more than happy to send you a copy of that. If you'll just communicate to us your address, you can do that by just shoot us an email, info@lifepointohio.com. We would be more than happy to mail that resource to you, if you would find that to be helpful. If you're our guest, at those same two places, either on social media platform or lifepointohio.com/watch, there's a guest info button. If you click on that button, take less than a minute to fill out that digital guest card. There are four ministries that we're already partnered with that are there. You choose one of those, the one that's closest to you, and we'll make an additional $5 donation in your honor so that you can do something good and kind just by being here and watching with us today. And then the last thing, for those of you who are regular attenders and members, as always, man, we're grateful for your generosity, how you share alongside with us in partnership to ways to reach not only the world, but to reach here locally. I want to highlight one of our partnerships today. I'll show you a couple of pictures now of LifeWise Academy. They are a local ministry that has a broader reach. They utilize legal means to teach the scriptures in public school settings. I know there's an initiative that's in front of our local Olentangy schools right now to see that happen and move forward. One of the folks on our staff team, Steve Clifton, is part-time on our staff team, but he works full-time with LifeWise. He would be more than happy to answer any questions that you have. I believe their website is lifewiseacademy.org if you would like to reach out to him. But we're super grateful for their partnership and how they're stepping into those public school settings, doing an incredible job of sharing the gospel and teaching